welcome to this episode of Musings. I am Alicia, and I am here for another discussion on my favorite books of the year. This is a tradition that I've had going. I think the first time I ever did a video on this was 2017. I skipped 1 year, but otherwise I've been doing videos like this since then, and I hope to keep doing them a lot in the future. As many of you know, I have a habit of trying to read somewhere in the ballpark of 52 books a year. I was going to say a week. That would be insane. 52 books a year. And this amounts to about one book a week. Now, this isn't some kind of, this isn't something I'm just following blindly with this like desperate desire to hit a number or something like that. Rather, it's sort of an arbitrary goal. I don't read a book a week. Sometimes I read zero books in a month and then like four books in 2 weeks. It sort of depends where I'm at. So I'm not restrictive in that regard. Another thing is if I don't hit 52, that's fine. I mean, the year that my child was born, I think I did 49, and that's still a lot of books for having a newborn baby. So the thing about this that matters to me is not the quantity of what I'm reading, although sometimes that does equal roughly one book a week. What I care much more about is the habit of reading, daily reading, ideally. And over the years, I've stretched this out a little bit. So my habit is to read about an hour a day. It depends on the day. I've actually been doing quite a lot more than an hour a day in the last year because I've been going to university. So there's many days where I'm reading 3+ hours a day just to learn what I'm trying to learn, my assignments and things like that. But I've also, in the last couple of years, probably 3 years now, had the habit of reading news. And the way that I prefer to read news right now anyway, because I think it's giving me a broad sense of global issues, is reading an issue of The Economist. And I don't necessarily read it cover to cover. And my reading of The Economist was really patchy last year, the first year I was in college. However, that is another reading thing that I like to do that doesn't have anything to do with the number of books I'm reading. So while I might be reading 52 books a year, I also might be reading issues of The Economist. I might be reading partial books, like not even a full book that I just won't count. I might be reading scientific articles and other things that one reads. So the point I'm making is that it's not about the number of books. It's about the habit of daily reading. And daily pleasure reading, too, not just like the hardcore stuff that I have to do for school, the kind of books that I just really want to read. And this, out of pretty much all of the habits that I've implemented, has been one of the ones with the most positive impact, with the most positive impact on my life. Hands down, this is very much like a top three thing. I don't know what the other two would be. Maybe being vegan is one of them. That's had an enormously positive impact on my life, just in terms of my own values and things like that. I don't know what the third one would be. There's probably something really obvious that I'm not thinking of. But this is a habit that I want to continue indefinitely. I love reading. I love what it does to my brain. I love being challenged by new ideas. I like wrestling with things that I've never thought about. I like researching to try to get the pulse on the collective view of things. And it's just all such a good party. I love it. Okay, so with that all out of the way, I read 28 books this year, which is a little more than half of what I usually do. But again, this was my first year in college. So while this number does include a few textbooks, it does not include the substantial bulk of what I did for reading in this past year. I read a lot of articles and partial books and things like that this year that just aren't counting towards that total. So I probably actually read more this year than I have in previous years, just because of it being university, and university, when you're in the humanities anyway, requires a ton of reading. So I did include some textbooks in this list, and these are textbooks that I went through cover to cover for a class. So I've gone cover to cover on a lifespan psychology class and a social psychology class. I took a lot of psychology classes. There was a lot of psychology reading, so that was really fun. I think I'm over with that, by the way. I think I've taken enough classes to now have a minor in psychology, and I thought maybe I would get to major status with it, but I'm not going to. I think let that one sit. I've done what I wanted to do. It was great fun, but it's not what I want to like kind of dive deep on, which is probably going to be more in the philosophy, history direction. We'll see. Anyways, there was a lot of psychology books. There was also included in this total was like a big batch of books about the 1930s in Canada, because I did a big paper on it and I got really like obsessed with, like, what was the political climate in this time period? And it was just, or, that was so fun. It was a rollicking good time. But fortunately for you, I am not putting any textbooks or 1930s Canada history books on my favorites list. I have just four that I've chosen as favorites this year, because it's going to just necessarily exclude a lot of things that I was reading in school that is, like, not going to be broadly applicable. I also read a lot of existentialism this year. I read a lot of Sartre, but I didn't read all of Being and Nothingness, for example, or I didn't read all of The Critique of Dialectical Reason. I read a little bit of it, so that's not going to count in my total either. But there is one existentialist work that's going to make it on my list, so we'll talk about that. I think it's a very nice, broad appeal kind of book, so we'll see about that, because it's a novel. What notes do I want to make before we get started? Oh, yes, honorable mention to just a really fun book that I read. So one thing I've learned about myself over the last year or so, I've tried to narrow in on my interests. And this has been a result of trying to decide what I want my major to be in university, for example. And I've learned that I'm obsessed with problems. I'm obsessed, well, that's too broad. I'm obsessed with death. And that's a little too morbid. So maybe I can say this as a way, like, I'm obsessed with the ideas of things that can end humanity. And in fact, I've even created a category for these musings where I hope to talk more about these kinds of things in the future. I'm really interested in AI, climate change, pandemics, nuclear war, any kind of, you know, I could probably come up with a dozen things, but off the top of my head, those are some disasters that I just get really fascinated by. I read a book about earthquakes this year, which I thought was really, really cool. Yeah, this is just an area of interest. So, okay, I'm interested in death as it applies to the entire human race. So that's something I think I'm going to be focusing on a little bit more as we go into the future. But the reason I say all of this now is because I read a really great book, and it's called, this is ridiculous. I'm just going to tell you anyway, you can judge me all you want. I think you should. I read a book called Nuclear War Survival Skills that was written in the late 1980s, or right around 1990, sort of when the Soviet, like, Cold War stuff was all big. It was a big thing. But the reason this book was so cool, and you can probably guess, like, the rabbit hole that led to me reading this book, war with Russia and Ukraine and potential nuclear escalation that's extremely unlikely, but curiosity-inducing enough for me to pick up a book about it. And then there's just this, like, fascinating world of how do you build like a survival shelter, and, like, you know, chapters dedicated to it with pictures and diagrams. I'm like, what is this? This is so cool. Or, like, what do you do about human waste in a disaster? Or what do you, what do you eat? Or, like, what's the reality of what a fallout cloud situation would look like? Would it be the end of civilization? Or is this just really going to be, like, a targeted? Anyway, it's great. If you're into that kind of stuff, then, this, like, nice thick manual is wonderful. I think it's available as a free PDF online, but I also have the hard copy because that's how, let's say, like, how intense I am. I also want to say, like, I'm not living in fear of the end of the world as we know it, even though what I've just said for the last few minutes probably makes it sound like I'm just this paranoid person in a bunker. I just find it really interesting. It's really cool. So unabashedly, I'm going to let you know that I think it's really cool, and you can make your own judgments on me hereafter. Okay, so favorite books that aren't about nuclear war, that aren't about psychology or the 1930s. Let's get into it. Actually, I'm looking at three out of four of them. So I'll talk about the one that I don't have a physical copy of. It was a library book, and it's called Breaking Bread with the Dead. Very good title. My partner, every time I talked about this book, he was like, baking bread. He just kept assuming that I was talking about a bread baking book. I'm like, no, breaking the bread. You're breaking the bread. You're having a conversation with dead people. Not in a sixth sense kind of way, mind you. But he kept imagining, like, why are you baking bread with dead people? So anyways, just a great little book. It's short, it's sweet, but it's sharp and adapt. And it was a book I read at the beginning of the year, right as I was starting university, right as I was getting into the idea of reading old books and having lectures on old books, especially when one gets into philosophy, that's what one does. And this book is basically exploring the idea of the benefit and the value of relocating yourself in time to another historical moment and embodying the experiences and thoughts of someone else in a different time period, and explores the idea that we sort of have this tendency to live in a myopic now, where we're just kind of, especially with, you know, the hot news of the day and social media and all these things, we tend to just live in a bubble of the moment where we're not really thinking too far back. We're not thinking too far forward. And we, I think, just exist with this lack of context, and how having an understanding of what came before, having like a broader context and not being quite so myopic in the way that we're living our lives, just enriches us as human beings. So anyway, it's really interesting, but it's very readable and it's really short. So highly recommend that one. That was a 5-star one for me. By the way, I am on Goodreads. So this is something I've been using since 2009. It's like social media for books, sort of. But it's a great way to keep track of your reading challenge if you want to set one for yourself, or just the books that you've read. And I find it's awesome because I can just browse this record of every book I've read since I started doing this in 2009, pretty much. I didn't always diligently track it, but it's pretty good. Okay, so as for the ones that are in my hands, I think let's start with existentialism, and I'll try to decide. I'm just looking at these, which is my favorite. I don't know. I'll decide that on the fly momentarily. But let's talk about Sartre. So Jean-Paul Sartre wrote a lot of books about existentialism, which is a thing in philosophy where you're considering meaning and stuff. What is life? What is meaning? My professors would be just very disappointed in that summary. Sorry about that. I did learn things from your class, I promise. Okay, Nausea. This is a novel, a quite famous one actually, by Sartre. And this involves his ideas in a way that is just intensely readable. I found it really readable. I found that there were a lot of passages where I was like, he goes into quite a lot of detail on thought processes and just kind of what is it like to experience other people? What's it like to just experience your own, like inhabit your own reality? I wonder if I can, it just ends in perfection. There's this really great scene. I'm not going to, like, no spoilers here, but just about art. And there's also some really ridiculous statements that are hilarious. I did highlight some hilarity. Basically the main character is just this neurotic, anxious mess. And he experiences this feeling of nausea, which is a really unpleasant reality distortion, essentially. Sudden transformations. A crowd of small metamorphoses accumulate in me without my noticing it, and then one fine day, a veritable revolution takes place. Little bits. Anyway, that's just a random thing. I highlighted, shall I awake in a few months, in a few years, broken, deceived, in the midst of new ruins? It reads like a journal. I think that's one of the really fun thing about it. But I can't explain what I see to anyone there. I am quietly slipping into the water's depths towards fear. Oh, this is so good. This is so up my alley. Love it. Anyway, lots of philosophy, this is like philosophy for non-philosophers, I think, which is probably why I like it. And then like little observations about life. Sorry, it's too good. 3 o'clock is always too late or too early for anything you want to do. It is a very awkward time in the afternoon. I am looking, okay. This is a moment of clarity. If I start a sentence like that, it's probably not going to be hilarious, but either way. It is... Smiles. His teeth are rotten. The red hand does not belong to him. It is his neighbor's, a fellow with a black mustache. This fellow with the mustache has enormous nostrils that could pump air for a whole family. It's good. It's good reading. So if you've ever wanted to get into existentialism, I think this is a great gateway to that. Because I find that being a nothingness starts like novel is way more dense, really tough. Anyways, okay, so now I have to make a decision about which one. Okay, let's talk about Invisible Women by Carolyn Criado Perez. This is a really important book, and it's, again, I think it's really readable. It's very data dense, basically like the last, I don't know, like chunk of this book is just like a whole bunch of references. And yeah, it basically like every sentence we have a new study that we're talking about. Anyways, it's very dense with information. And the idea with Invisible Women is it's basically about all the ways in which women are considered other, secondary. Whereas the male is the defaults and women are kind of like the exception. The world's built for men. And it goes through all kinds of examples about this. Everything from how cars are not designed for women's safety in mind, and women are more likely to be harmed in car crashes when they have bad car crashes, just because the safety standards are for men's bodies and women's bodies are totally different in a lot of really important ways. And of course, I should mention that this book is like, you know, male, female, like it's talking about biological sex a lot of the time here, for what that's worth. So it's great. It's good. It's deep. It talks about the way women are treated as other in basically every aspect of life. So it kind of has you like, man, this sucks. Things suck. Man, come on. Let's like get our act in gear. Make things more equitable for all of the humans on this planet, not just the males. Anyways, we could talk about that at great length. I will not. I feel like I've already been talking quite a lot. So let's wrap up with what I think is my favorite book of the year. I've left this one last. I like the cover. Maybe that was part of the reason that I saved it for last. But I think this one had probably the most transformative effect on me. This one really, again, I think it's great as a piece of philosophy. I didn't read it with my philosophy classes. It just, well, I'll show you. Okay, so it's called 4,000 Weeks, Oliver Berkman. I don't know what I was expecting when I picked up this book, because it's called Time Management for Mortals. So I'm like, okay, this is going to be like some personal development thing where I learn how to be more productive, whatever. I picked it up and was, I guess, not really expecting that much from it, because I've read a lot of productivity books in my day and I kind of don't care about them anymore for the most part. I'm not that interested in optimizing myself. I'm more interested in enjoying myself, I think, is a direction I'm much more happy to go in these days. But I picked this up anyway. I think I heard good things about it and I was just curious. And yeah, I mean, I was pretty hooked. It's not, I think the mortals part is really important to underline in this title, Time Management for Mortals, because it's not about how you can like cram more in and be more productive. Totally nothing like that. It's more about what actually matters in life. The whole title, 4,000 Weeks, that's the average human lifespan. And it's talking about this and mortality in the context of like what is the most worth spending your time on. And there's just like lots of excellent food for thought in here. I wonder if I can just pick out random highlights. I have quite a lot of highlights in this book, and in no particular, I'm just going to flip to, she'll never feel fulfilled because she's treating the present solely as a path to some superior future state. And that's in a chapter all about the moment. Moments, man. Because children grow up. We think a child's purpose is to grow up, Herzen says. But a child's purpose is to be a child. Nature doesn't disdain what only lives for a day. It pours the whole of itself into each moment. Life's bounty is in its flow. Later is too late. What else do I got? Like another chapter. Some Zen Buddhists hold that the entirety of human suffering can be boiled down to this effort to resist paying full attention to the way things are going, because we wish things were going differently. This shouldn't be happening. Or because we wish we felt more in control of the process. This is very much like not about productivity in this sense. To try to live in the moment implies that you're somehow separate from the moment, and thus in a position to either succeed or fail at living in it. And this is very weird that I'm reading this, because right at this, like half an hour ago, I was writing about this. And I'm pretty much trying to say the same thing in a way more convoluted way. So good job, Oliver Berkman, for your clarity of thoughts that I am so far from being able to emulate. Having large amounts of time but no opportunity to use it collaboratively isn't just useless, but actively unpleasant. So we like doing things with other people. Same basic mistake of treating our time as something to hoard when it's better approached as something to share, even if that means surrendering some of your power to decide exactly what you do with it and when. Every gain in personal temporal freedom entails a corresponding loss in how easy it is to coordinate your time with other people's. That's interesting too. Anyways, great book. I love it. It gave me so much food for thought. Apparently I'm emulating some of these thoughts in my own writings and I didn't even know it. So I guess I'm going to have to read through this again and see what's changed. I went through a period in the summer. I read this in the summer where I had this whole like dream of the 90s thing. Some of you might have remembered I talked about that. I wrote about it. I'm not sure if I did a video, but I definitely did a podcast on it. And by the way, I also have another podcast episode from this week where it's podcast only. Just because I wanted to read it, it felt more like an intimate thing where I wanted to sit in the dark and just read you something. So that exists if you want to check it out. Where was I going with that? Yeah, read it in the summer, went through this whole dream of the 90s thing, this idea that life is to be enjoyed. What a crazy thought. Dream of the 90s just being like a stupid reference to that Portlandia song. The dream of the 90s is alive in Portland, but the idea of sleeping till 11, being in heaven, working part-time, just like enjoying life, hanging out. It's like basically being a 20-year-old, or what I imagine life is like for most 20-year-olds. Maybe it's not like that nowadays. And I was really in that mode of, yes, like life is meant to be fun. It's not, well, I guess it's meant to be whatever you want it to be. There's no like one true definition of life, but it feels incomplete when life is a grind. And I just think that 4,000 weeks was a really great ride that helped me reinforce some ideas about just enjoyment, about, you know, what living in the moment actually means. It's not about like eking out every last drop, but it's more about letting a lot of things go, including control. So those are my books that I read that I liked. Hopefully, I don't know, maybe this gives you something to read or just interesting in some capacity. But I'd love to know if you've read any great books. I always love reading based on recommendations. Of course, my ability to read right now is pretty hampered by the fact that I've got a lot of reading assignments on the go for school. But do drop it in the comments, because I always like knowing what's changing people's minds and hearts and things like that, and what's speaking to you in the moment. Thank you so much for watching this video. I'll catch you in the next one.